You know our slogan around here is better practice, better life. But we're taking this belief to the next level. And we've recently announced the creation of a new association. It's called the Best Practices Association. Our association celebrates the mindset that is better practice, better life. This mindset celebrates time, healthy living, personal growth, clinical excellence, and impacting the lives of your patients and your team through intentional leadership. In fact, we are the work-life balance experts in dentistry. The BPA will coach independent dental practices like yours to thrive by sharing best practices and operational habits, behaviors, systems, tools, and insight that lead to profitability and sustained growth, and you can still have a life. So if you're a dentist that wants to surround yourself with great thinkers, let us help you create your own version of better practice, better life. Go to actdental.com/BPA or hit the link in the show notes. Thanks for listening to Best Practices Show, where we share the best business practices for the best dental practices all over the country. And boy, do I have a treat for you today. If you've ever been paying attention to restorative dentistry, or you have a list of the best speakers in dentistry, you have this guy on it. Or if you've ever had a drink with him at the bar, he's one of the most fun guys in all of dentistry. Truly one of my favorite people in all of dentistry. I mean, if you were my neighbor, I'd probably hang out with you all the time to the point where you hate me. And he has pictures of me in a fountain with him in somewhere in Texas. I won't even tell you what that's about, but his name's Dr. Jeff Roush from Spear Education. Truly one of the most gifted educators in all of dentistry. Great guy. And today we're going to be talking about a very interesting concept. We're going to cover two of them today. And one of them is it can't be done, all be done with a burr. And then the other idea is, hey, I don't have those kinds of patients in my practice, which is a myth that a lot of dentists share with themselves about their practices. But before we get started, I always want to say this. If you're here for the first time, I want to welcome you. And a lot of young dental students and dentists, we met you through the COVID conference and you're like, what the heck is this? What do we do? And some of you have found yourselves over the podcast. Hey, I know if you're listening on Spotify, do me a favor. If you're driving, pull over. Don't do this while you're driving. Just go down to the subscribe button. See that little button right there? Just hit the subscribe button because I want you to keep showing up. Every single week, you're going to see I'm going to bring you a brand new expert in dentistry just to bend your mind a little bit so that you can have a better practice and a better life. And the other thing is some of you go, what do you do? Heck, I don't even know what I do sometimes, but we're a practice coaching company. So if you're a dentist and you own your own practice and you're like, you know what? I got culture problems. I got two people in my office that don't get along. I got people problems. Or you know what? I don't make enough profit. I give a lot of it to Delta Dental every single year and I don't want to do that anymore. Or you know what? I just don't like my work schedule. I'm probably working evenings, Saturdays, working too much. That is the perfect scenario. Give us a call. We're practice coaches. Look, you may not even need a coach, but you just need somebody to sort your thoughts. We're here for you. Dentistry is the greatest profession ever. It's how you practice dentistry. That's the key piece. There's no rules. You ever thought about that? You can practice however you want to practice. You don't have to do it like anybody else. Your favorite thing, I promise you, is when you just walk to your office and you go, I like the way I do it. I don't have to do it any other. So I want to introduce my friend, talking about a guy who likes doing it his way, Dr. Jeff Roush. So I want to introduce my guest first. Jeff, you and I have been friends for a long time. Now I'm going to remind you, my 94-year-old grandmother listens to this show, so keep it a little bit PG. And I want people to know before we get into this, who Dr. Jeff Roush is. I mean, if you've ever been to a meeting anywhere, this guy, wait, I'll tell one story. I went to the Texas Dental Association. I was a speaker there and I had the badge on and everything. And I was like trying to get into the room. They wouldn't even let me into the room. There was nowhere to sit. I had to squeeze in along the wall. It was standing room only at the Texas Dentals. And I watched this guy, Dr. Jeff Roush, wow, a whole room and some great minds in there. It's awesome stuff. And I know if you're listening, you've had the same experience. But who's Dr. Jeff Roush if I've never heard of Jeff Roush?
Well, first of all, let me finish that story. 'Cause We actually, I think you were there the year before when I wasn't speaking. And
in the limo?
Yes. I sent a limo down with to pick you and Bob Winter up to bring you to my house to drink all night with me. And then you did a good job, not a great job.
What?
Because you said I have to work tomorrow. I have to work tomorrow. And I told you that was the difference between you and I, that I was a professional. I could get up the next morning and do it.
That is a true story, you guys, if you're listening. Like, I was like, first of all, you go, oh, there's a car outside and my friend Bob. Well, I didn't know it was Bob Winter. And it was like, it took me like 10. I'm like, you're Bobby Winter. That was number one. Number two, if you've ever been to Texas, like Jeff throws an amazing party at his house. You did say that. Yeah. And I had to get the heck out of here. So
couldn't take the margaritas that evening. But who am I? I'm a prosthodontist in private practice in San Antonio, Texas. In fact, when we're about to talk about practices and how your practice and mine are the same, and just different ways of getting people to do things. My practice is the same as yours, has the same problems as everybody else's because my air conditioning was out today. So it was a bazillion degrees and I was getting rather ripe towards the end of the day. And luckily I got to shut it down early and come do this podcast because it was getting pretty bad. But, you have to deal with those problems. So I've always believed, while there are great academic teachers, I always loved hearing guys that have to suffer just like me. And so I do. I'm in private practice and have been 32 years now or something like that. The other, I guess, joyful thing that I get to do is I get to teach at Spear Education. And that's really my passion. So if I could somehow, it's one of those things I was going to say, if I could somehow just teach, but that it, I think you kind of have to do it to teach it. So I have to do the practice to make it fair for everyone else in where it doesn't seem just like magic, right? Like, oh, I did this case and that case. And you got to be able to suffer through getting people to do the case, right? And getting them to pay you and all the rest and taking care of the overhead. So, but I do get to teach at Spear Education. I get to teach a bunch of stuff. You'd like this. The guy the other day, I started talking about treatment planning. And I started talking about what if a tooth broke and how are we going to manage it? And the guy at the end of the lecture said, wow, that was amazing. I didn't really know you did restorative dentistry. I'm a prosthodontist. I do restorative dentistry all the time. I just think of airway, which is what people know me. I think of airway and how to set up the case. I just do dentistry. So I teach treatment planning at Spear. I teach worn dentition, which is a course solely focused on rehabilitation of worn dentition cases. And then I also teach the airway prosthodontics course there, which is a little bit about what you and I are going to visit about on how to see treatment planning a little differently. I've almost got to the point where I call it advanced treatment planning rather than airway, because airway makes it seem like you're going to make an appliance, but it's really just treatment planning.
Right. I love it. So you saw a post, and I hope, Coachman is a mutual friend of ours. So
yeah, I talked to him actually.
Yeah, you did. So you saw a
post. I told him I was going to steal it.
Okay. So tell us what the post was. So Christian, if you're listening, we're stealing it. So
yeah. So, it really sucks, this post, because it's really smart. And I mean, it's a very thoughtful thing. And he's way too good looking to actually also be smart. I mean, that just sucks that he gets both. God was not fair on that one. But anyway, back to the post. In my humble opinion, the main challenge of modern dentistry is go beyond the aesthetically driven camouflage treatment culture. And I wrote him and I totally agree. I wrote him and said that we need to also have ENTs and sleep physicians think the same way. Because what he's basically suggesting, he wrote a follow-up to that. So that was the little meme thing at the top. And then he wrote a lot about it. And his idea was we need to stop just taking constricted arches and malocclusions and camouflaging it by adding veneers and crowns. That we need to get to the core problem, which is that we've got a dentofacial growth problem and we need to address that. So one of the topics you and I were going to discuss on your list was it can't all be done with a burr. And yeah, that's how I say those words. He said it more eloquently than I did, but restorative dentists tend to try to, you know, hammer and nail kind of thing. Restorative dentists do the same thing.
Right.
It's how do I fix it with a burr?
Right. Because in dental school, everything, you know, the tool that you're given is a burr to fix everything. And then when you get out, you know, there's a whole lot more to just treating patients. So talk about the evolution for any dentist, even if it's a young dentist listening today.
Yeah. You know, you said, you know, there's more. That's a problem because I don't think people do know there's more.
Really?
I honestly don't. I think they go to courses and see that there's more, but dental school has a huge problem and I don't think there's an answer to it. Honestly, I can't figure an answer because if you turned a dental school over to me tomorrow, could I put a curriculum in that would advance our ability to treatment plan more ideally the way Christian was talking about? Absolutely. What would be the problem? Well, a lot of those treatment plans require multiple years. So you're not getting the hands-on, right? You're not actually cutting on teeth and stuff. You're doing other things. But even more important, it would require retraining all of the faculty. And every time a new faculty member came in, they'd have to be retrained all over again. And so the faculty at dental schools, and I liken it to this. At Spear, we teach that facially generated treatment planning starts with aesthetics. Where do the teeth belong? Like setting a denture. Function, how do you put the lower denture in and get it to work right? Then you talk about structural issues and biologic issues. Do they have disease? Do they break a tooth? What kind of ceramic I'm going to use? In dental school, we only talk structure and biology. There's no where do the teeth belong. It is simply get hand skills so that you're not going to hurt people when you leave. And you need to do that. You absolutely do. The problem is we call it treatment plan, right? They say, okay, I want you, you know, you've met your new patient. Now you're going to present your treatment plan to me. And that implies that it's comprehensive in nature and it's not even close. It's not, and it ought to be almost, if we could reverse the words, like present your plan for the treatment you're going to render. Because when we say the word treatment planning, I'm thinking way bigger than that. I'm thinking, how do we get the teeth in the right location? How do we get the occlusion correct? None of that is taken care of in dental school. Then you end up leaving. And that leads us to this, do they know that there's more? And I don't know. I mean, I honestly don't. And I try my best to hang around with new grads. In fact, at Spear now, the last few courses we've taught, the majority of the people that introduce themselves, by the time it's time for me to introduce myself, and we always ask, you know, where did you go? When did you graduate? All that. I will say, you know, 3/4 of you graduated at a year that I won't drink wine that's younger than that. So it's crazy. And we're how lucky we are to get those people in, but I think they're the minority. Yeah. And I think that we need to spread, you know, continue to spread the word. I know you have Bill Robbins on all the time and we need to continue to spread the word that there's more than just structural and biologic issues. There's a bigger picture that needs to be taken into consideration.
Right. But how much of this is, okay, so Jake, your son is how old? How old is he?
Just turned 17.
Okay, so he's 17. So I've got an 18-year-old, I've got a 20-year-old, and I got a 16-year-old, and I'm trying to give them advice. And they're like, no, Dad, you don't know how it really is. And I remember when I was 20, my dad's at my house today. And he's like, oh my gosh, it was so hard to talk to you in your 20s because you had it all figured out. And then at 30, I'm like, wow, there's a few things I don't know. And then at 40, I wondered if I knew anything. And now I'm 51. And I think I forgot. I mean, I'm questioning everything now. You know what I mean? I think my brain's a little, but do you feel like as people go into career, I mean, do you have to fall on your face a little bit? Do you have to before you start to, who are your favorite dentists to talk to at Spear that you're like, oh, this person totally gets what I'm trying to say? Is there a specific area or a specific person or demographic you can think of?
I don't know how to, no, I mean, all right. No, there's not. There's not a, that's them. But I can tell you that I can, by the end of the class, I can tell who it is.
Right.
So it's never, you know, it's more women than men. It's more 20-year-olds and 40-year-olds as well. I would guess it's people that, I guess my thing and what I sense in them is they're never satisfied. They're always trying to, you know, what else can I do type of thing.
Right.
My moment, actually, I remember it. I know exactly the moment. My moment was, I was in San Antonio. I was decent. I was a decent dentist. I had gone to a 2-year residency. I had worked with a periodontist for a couple of years doing implants. So I did them all the time. I did rehabs all the time. I was good. I purchased a practice. The practice was a well-run practice, did good dentistry, had my own lab. So I was doing fine. And I was sitting in an audience in 1995 at the Restorative Academy meeting, and John Coyce put cases up on the screen, and I looked at him and went, I can't do that. I don't know how to do what he's doing. And instead of just saying, you know, okay, and go home and do what I did, it just drove me crazy that somebody was doing better than I was doing. And so the next week I wrote him a letter. He returned it. It started me on a journey with him and Frank up in Seattle. And it pushed me to then become a prosthodontist and just kept going and going. So there's an inquisitiveness to people that really want to get it.
Yeah.
That's different in class than the people that are there for the kind of experience. So Greg Kinzer and I teach the treatment planning together. And I bet we could come up with the same 2 or 3 names at the end of every course. We would pick the same ones because there's just something different about them.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean that other people can't. And it may just be the situation, the timing, you know, everyone says that when the message comes, when you're ready to receive it, and it may just be that.
Yeah.
I love it though. I love it when I see it in a person that's been out 2 or 3 years. It's just the most awesome feeling because they're going to have a different life.
Oh, I love that. I've never heard that story. You never told me the story about the moment it changed for you. That's pretty cool.
See, yeah, because you leave early. You always leave. That's a late night, a little bit more margarita story. You always are out of there. Like, I got to go home and get sleep.
Now you guys are getting the real story here behind the story. Dude, that is all right. So I want you to go back to that. When you say it can't all be done with a burr, help us through that chasm. And when you talk about the wax rim, give us a different way to think. And when you said wax rim, setting up a denture, how do you think now?
Okay. So, one of the problems we have, and I've talked to Coachman about it as well, he totally gets it as well, is if we just do a digital setup, or I do it analog still, and I show people what they can do, you then have to follow it up with a treatment plan that gets the teeth into the right location. So digital or analog makes no difference. When you give them a vision, you then have to present a treatment plan. But if the only thing a dentist knows how to do is cut with a burr, they don't understand the interdisciplinary nature of what really they just put on the teeth, then they try to provide a solution simply by warping ceramic, building out huge bicuspids, you know, teeth that are overlapped. Well, if I prep this and I can do this and do that. I mean, they're always trying to figure out how to solve it with a burr. And what we've started to look at and look at it differently is, if you take that case and you can, the analog or digital version of the mock-up is great because it gets commitment from the patient. I want that. But I want you to then, instead of just counting the number of teeth you've covered and going, that's the number of veneers I do, I want you to actually ask yourself, if that's where I want the teeth and the bone doesn't support it or the teeth don't support it and I have to warp things, is that really the right treatment plan for the patient? Just adding on. Now, it doesn't mean that you can't do that eventually, right? Some people are just going to decline everything. But I now am visualizing it differently. I say, if I want the teeth there, okay, turn the existing teeth and bone support into a wax rim. So visualize it just in wax. No teeth are set at all. So we now have a wax rim shaped the way that their arch is. And then imagine holding a sleeve of teeth that you're going to set in that wax rim. And what every dentist does when they try in a wax rim, Kirk, is they actually look for three things. One, is it level? That's an easy one. So they have the patient smile, they look at it, is it level? The second one is, does it support the lip? Which means in an AP direction, is it overly supportive or under? And it almost never supports it enough. And so we get some folding and some deep nasolabial folds and stuff. And we go, oh, we need more support there. And the last is, we have them smile and we look at it in a transverse dimension. And in that transverse dimension, we would say, oh, the right side needs to come out farther, or both sides need to come out farther, or we got it. And once again, we rarely say we got it. We usually are modifying it somehow. So if you say to me, I wouldn't set the teeth until I did this, then what you're really saying is the bone is in the wrong location. The skeleton is wrong right now. And rarely would a dentist, if I gave you that wax rim that we were just talking about, rarely would a dentist say, you know what? If I leave out some teeth, I could get them all in there. So I'll just leave out the first bites. Rarely would a dentist say, you know what? If I just take these teeth and slenderize all of them, I could probably get them in there. And rarely would a dentist say, you know what? If I just hung the bicuspids out in the kind of the edge of the wax, I could get them in there and make it look right. No dentist would do any of those things. Every dentist, though, would add base plate wax, or we would take the wax rim and warm it and move it. And that's orthodontics. So if you're, what Coachman was speaking to was the idea that we're camouflaging a bad wax rim, and we shouldn't, because, and you and I have talked a lot about this in other shows, if you have a lousy maxillary wax rim in particular, you can't breathe through your nose as well, and you will have a much higher rate of sleep apnea. And actually, Christian works with an ENT down in Brazil that has just published some work on that, that showed the narrowness in the premolar space, or the height of the palate in the premolar space, either one, makes you more likely to have sleep apnea. So they're, from an ENT perspective, they're saying, if you're narrow, you also can't breathe through your nose. You can't breathe through your nose, you're going to have sleep apnea more than likely. He then went farther to expand them. Take the wax rim, grab it, move it out. What happened? They got better. So camouflage needs to go away. And it also needs to go away in ENT, and it needs to go away in sleep. Camouflage is ridiculous. ENTs, the classically trained ENTs, are only soft tissue surgeons for the most part. They will take a septum that is deviated, they will take away pieces, and they will re-put it together within a small box. And the research has been done at Stanford saying, if you try to work within a small box, there are going to be a bunch of symptomatic patients. And the reason is the maxilla is too small. They're going to take away a soft palate by doing surgery, when in fact, the soft palate's just fine. It's just in the wrong place. So instead of moving the soft palate where it needed to be, they just cut it out and pretend that the skeleton is normal. They're going to cut away on the tongue or shock the tongue to make it smaller. Why? because they're going to call it macroglossia when it's really micromouthy and the mouth is way too small to hold it in there. And the sleep physicians are the same way. Their classic articles all say this is an anatomic issue, but then they go find solutions through CPAP and Inspire where they shock the tongue. It's just stupid. It is. Everyone needs to see what Coachman's talking about, which is we're camouflaging the real problem, which is a skeleton. And today we're good at moving the skeleton around. We're way better than we've ever been able to do. So,
yeah. And it's brilliant how you've positioned this in your thought process. You guys can see this is why I love this guy. Like, you're always going to challenge the way we think, but you're also, go back to this. You and I were talking before we went live. You're dealing with that component, but you're also dealing with a dynamic component called the patient. You said, you know, even though I've got this in my mind, I'm still negotiating with the patient. You know, what's the issue here? What can you explain that? Because while those are important functions of what we would consider treatment, the patient, you're still like trying to map this out for them. Walk us through that.
So Frank Spear introduced the idea of facially generated treatment planning back in 1985. And what he said is we need to go beyond dental school, which is structure and biology. We need to actually start looking at aesthetics and function first. So anytime a patient would walk in, you begin by setting a denture mentally. Now, he didn't go through, he was talking about that we set the centrals first and we work our way around. Very two-dimensional in his thought. That's why the airway part of it at Spear now adds this third dimension. And in fact, one of the things I told you earlier is I hate even calling it a course. I have gotten immune to the idea that it should be called anything but treatment planning. It's just a different way of seeing. Instead of calling it an airway prosthodontic workshop, it ought to be advanced treatment planning. That's it. So 2D view of the world. Now, here's my problem. Because I went and trained. I did that. I did COIS. I did all that stuff. Now I come back to the office and I see the world differently. Bill Robbins enters my practice. We see the world the same and wrote Global Diagnosis, which is just a treatment planning idea. And it's where the teeth belong in the world. And then we work our way past that into function and structure and all the rest, right? My problem was, it's hard to sell people on going through a ton of ortho or orthognathic surgery to be prettier. That just, you know, you do get a few, you know, their teeth are breaking down. You can interest them in the idea of it. And then sometimes you can talk a person into doing it functionally. Like, your bite's kind of off and we need to get your bite better. But I could sell some aesthetics and I could sell a tiny bit of function. But structure and biology is easy, right? It's like, you broke your tooth. I need to fix it. So I think all of the treatment planning concepts that are out there have a weakness, and it requires the dentist to be able to communicate at a higher level. And so I had worked a lot. I don't know if you know Omer Reed, but Omer, I would go to his courses on how to present treatment plans. I did that over and over again to work on that skill. And I still couldn't sell everyone. I was okay at it. I wasn't great, but I was okay at it. The difference is when you start talking about health, you've got their attention. You absolutely have their attention. So not only are we providing the right treatment plan by making the wax rim normal, the minute you can say, oh, and by the way, people that have upper jaws that are shaped like you, they have these things. And you look at their medical history, you look at their dental history, you know, reflux, bruxism, high blood pressure, AFib. I mean, just make out lists. Whatever the list is, you go, and these things you told me about may go away because they're probably related to the fact that you can't breathe. Now you get their attention. I actually had a lady the other day that was begging me to call the surgeon to get, because he had one appointment, then it was going to be like 6 months before the next. And she said, could you please, while I'm here, call him and see if I can get that slot, because I want to have my upper jaw broken free and moved. Like, how often do you hear that? It's crazy.
Not frequently, but
yeah, it's crazy. So people want to be healthy. And the benefit then, the side benefit, is they look better and they function better. And so it's the treatment plan we've always wanted to do. We just have a point of discussion we've never had before.
Yeah. And go a little bit further on that. The treatment planning you've always wanted to do, you start to do it. You have a lot more clinical confidence. And then I want you to put that together with a comment that you made before we got started. When dentists say, well, yeah. Jeff, I get what you're saying. I don't have any patients like that in my practice. Yeah. I don't know where you practice, but I don't have patients like that. Can you give me your real honest opinion to the answer to that response?
I guess, yeah, you know, so when Greg and I teach together, he'll put up cases that he's done. I put up cases that I've done. And I, a lot of times, not, I'll hear from people, usually I kind of hear it as they're leaving the room talking to a buddy of theirs, right? They'll go, that was pretty cool, but I don't have any of those kind of patients in my practice. And it just didn't sit right with me because, I mean, I'm in San Antonio, Texas. I'm not in LA, you know, I'm not in Beverly Hills. I'm not in Seattle, to be honest with you. Seattle was pretty, when I worked with Greg, that was pretty fun. San Antonio, Texas, I got a lot of people that can do this and that. I don't have a lot of people that just walk in and write a bunch of checks, right? For big money. But it hit me that thing hit me last October. Because I had four people that came in October. They ranged in age from 48 to 48. There were all women, and from student to housewife to physician type. All right. And the four people that came in had, except for one, had lived in San Antonio their whole life. They all had between two and five dentists that they had seen in their lifetime. Now, we're not talking pediatric. I'm talking adult lifetime, two to five, right? And they all came into my practice, and all of them had a need for significant restorative care and had never been told about it. And no one had ever looked at them and said, this is really what you know, this is a problem. These are, and here's some of the answers to some of the issues you have. And some of the issues were TMD issues, recession issues, breathing and sleep issues, bruxism. I mean, there were a wide variety, but I went through with all of them and just presented a treatment plan. This is what I see. The wax room is wrong. The wax room needs to be better. Here's how to make the wax room better. And here's the restorative care that I need to do along the way and at the end of your treatment. So between those four, it was way over $100,000 worth of treatment, closer to 150. I mean, it was a lot when you add in all the other stuff. And I had heard the comment right after all of them had come in. And I just was like, well, yeah, where do you think those people were? I mean, they were not, they don't magically turn into this patient that just wants everything and can afford everything when they walk in my door. They were in dentist practices the whole time. They had the same amount of money. They had the same problems. So the idea that Jeff Rouse and Greg Kinzer have a different patient base than you do isn't right. We have exactly the same patients. We just look beyond what dental school taught us in structure and biology, and we start looking for these other factors. And we've put together an interdisciplinary team that can actually address it. So it's pay attention, put together a team, and be able to present a plan that says here's where the teeth really need to be. And I think the strongest thing that I've had, because my treatment plans acceptance rate has gone crazy once I started to be able to say, oh, by the way, these medical issues and these other dental issues, they may go away when we actually do this treatment. Won't that be great?
Yeah. Now the key word, I want you to go back. You said a key word, may. I want you to talk about, like, one of the things I've learned from you is you don't make monster promises when you're talking to patients. Oh, can you talk about managing patients' expectations at this level with what you know now?
Yeah, honestly, it's easy to have this discussion. Because what you can tell them is, at your age, and whatever that age is, it doesn't matter. It's at your age, 28 or 48, doesn't matter. At your age, you've neurologically been damaged by the inability to breathe over this long period of time, not only at night, but during the day. I have no way to assess how these changes in the anatomy will impact your ability to breathe. I do know at the end, your smile is going to be better and your function is going to be better. And I hope, given all the data we actually have out there, that you react the same way everyone else has done. If you don't, then we'll consider doing this or, you know, whatever the other options are. But I'm just trying to give you the best opportunity to heal yourself. If you had come to me when you were 3, now we'd have a different discussion. I could probably at 3 or 4, I could probably say, you know, I bet I can get you better. And if I can get you better, I might keep you better for a long time.
Yeah. Dude, you're the best. I have like 12 more questions that I know I can't keep you forever. Like I'm pretty sure I could keep this going on for another hour. But guys, I'm telling you, like, you made me tape my lips a couple of years ago, and I can't remember what that was. But I sleep so much better. And my wife was like, I don't think you should do that. Like, oh God. I'm like, Jeff Routes, that was okay. So I was like, I know you know what you're talking about. You always make my life better. I do want to ask, you know, just while we wrap this up, and I'm going to have you back again and again and again, because I've absolutely loved this concept. What last thoughts? If I'm a young dentist, Jeff, and I'm listening and I'm picking up what you're putting down, help me think better about the next 30 years of my career with this concept.
What to do, yeah. What they should do.
Well, just a couple last thoughts about this, you know, as I look forward to my future.
I guess the thing I would tell you is, I've been talking about this since 2008. So this is not a fad, you know. People that when I battled a lot of. I've fought a lot of battles over this stuff, right? And so this isn't, if you're a young dentist and you're hearing this, you're like, oh, that, they didn't teach me that in dental school and blah, 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 blah. Well, that's kind of a weird concept. Okay, well, this is not a fad. This is dentistry. This is where it is going. And so if you are considering, and, you know, if your goal is, I want to be a leader, I want to be the best, I want to have my practice as one that everyone wants to come to. I want to be able to do things that make it fun. You know, I want to be confident in my ability to do these and render a good treatment on my patients. You need to start learning more about airway. And the next part of that is not sleep. So don't go to learn how to make a sleep appliance. Yeah, you need to know how to do it. I'm not saying not to go to those courses, but do not go to a course in making appliances or sleep, you know, any kind of sleep based course and assume they mean airway, because they don't. They're going to take a person that has apnea at night and they're going to make them healthier. But that the past, Kurt, actually, I told you this before, but I didn't update you. 2019, I made 4 appliances, and 2020, I made 0. And I look at airway on every single patient, and there's no need to make those appliances for the majority of the people that come to your practice. So don't, if you're a young dentist and you don't, please be clear. There is a huge difference between what we teach at Spear with airway and a traditional sleep course making appliances.
I love it. Now, As we get ready to wrap up, Jeff, I want people to check out the stuff that you're doing at Spear. So let's say I've never been there. Like, how do I get involved? What course? Here's a good one. Where do I start? Like, if I'm listening, I've never been. What is Spear Education? How do I get there? Where do I start?
You know, there are a couple of different ways. I would go to speareducation.com actually, and then they can link you into somebody to help at that point. If you want to investigate all the courses and have some guidance, because we have these campus counselors that'll assist you in working your way through all the different offerings. Because we have it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger what we're doing there now, and especially in the online platform is huge now and continuing to grow in all different directions, from an education, you know, active live engagement to things that you can watch like Netflix type of deal. I always recommend starting with the treatment planning courses. And I would probably just start with the workshop, to be honest with you. There are tons of seminars you can hear, but I've always found that just listening to it never changed me. You know, it inspired me. Like when I heard Kois, it inspired me to find more. But there was no way I could have watched John Kois at a seminar over and over and over again and actually ever changed. I had to go see him. I had to be with him. I had to learn in that kind of environment. So if you were going to say what to do, go to speareducation.com, find a camp, find an advisor, have them guide you around. If I was to make a recommendation of first courses, I would say facially generated treatment planning workshop, because once you've got that, then the airway stuff makes more sense. If you feel like your treatment planning skills are, you know, it's like, okay, bring it on. Then the airway workshop would make the next one, because that's going to refine the skill. The workshop, by the way, is so different than when you and I started talking. It's completely different. It was a lot about making different night guards and that kind of thing. And now it's just a treatment planning exercise, rethinking how we plan, kind of the way that Coachman outlined it. It's just now we've got a protocol for it.
Yeah. And I'll just pile on. Not only are you going to get great education and challenge your thought process, but it lights your fire. You know, a big part you didn't mention is when you went to see Kois out there, or Spirit, like you came back and your fire was extra lit. So it wasn't so much the information. You get to meet some incredible people. It's a community. Everything is great. So I'm going to encourage you, if you're listening, don't even think about it. Just check it out. Make sure you check out Spear Education, what Jeff said. Also, if Jeff ever comes, are you speaking anymore on the road? Probably not a ton.
No, like twice. I'm going to be in Atlanta in a couple of weeks and one other place.
I'm just saying, when Elvis comes to town, you should see Elvis. You're like, this guy you'll never be bored for a second. And it is powerful stuff, brother. I appreciate you so much. I know you got to run here, but I always enjoy our conversations.
That's fine.
Tequila in your kitchens. And I am excited to see where the next journey leads us, but I'm going to have you back. I'm going to voluntold you and make you come back again and again and again. What do you think?
Yeah, good. I'm in. Let's do it.
Awesome. Well, stick around. We'll say goodbye to everybody else. Thank you guys for listening to the Best Practices Show. If you enjoyed today, just do us a favor, hit the share button, which I know you did enjoy it. So hit it. So make sure you keep sending us suggestions for things that you want to hear from Jeff, and I'll get him back on and we'll ask the real expert the questions, and he'll give us some great answers. But until we hear from you guys, or you guys see us next time, or we see you next time, keep watching the Best Practices Show. You guys enjoy the rest of your day. There you have it. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Best Practices Show. I hope you sure did enjoy it. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out to us. We are always here for you. And if you haven't done so already, make sure you subscribe to the show on iTunes or wherever you consume podcasts. And if you really enjoy it, you can leave a comment or a 4 or 5 star review. But until we see you next time, keep watching the Best Practices Show.